this show, there will be discussions of the true crime variety. Murder, mayhem, violence, and adult themes will be talked of. Listener discretion is advised. Hey, everybody, fans of mine, family mostly, and friends who are still listening to my show. Welcome back. I'm glad you guys are sticking with me. I seem to have some steady listeners, and I'm just steadily pumping out material. So I figure so long as I keep doing this, I don't know, I'll have enough to put out there for the whole world, and maybe I'll actually make some money out of this. For now, it's just fun for me. I just enjoy listening to this stuff and sharing it with you. So I guess without any further ado, maybe I should let you guys know that that early voting in Ohio is on. It is on. I think it was on since the 6th, and as of now, it's the, well, I don't even know what today's date is. What is today's date? Saturday, October 10th. I had yesterday a wellness thing at the administration building, and there was the Board of Elections there, and I went in and just voted early. Lines weren't too terrible. There's people voting up a storm, and it was just crowded. I really hated that there was no 6-foot distance, but I had my mask. Poll workers had their masks on. Bunch of people don't seem to want to wear their masks over their noses. I don't know why. Guys, you look like you're wearing mustaches. It's not protecting anything. Last I checked, air still comes out of your nose. So please wear your mask appropriately and you'll be fine. People who complain that it's really hard to talk with their masks on are usually the same people who are wearing it wrong. So if you wear it right, it won't be bunched up in your mouth. I guess that's my 2 cents. I'm so sorry. I was so happy, and then all of a sudden I took it down. But no, I'm serious. Go out there and vote. Right now you can do early voting. You can drop your absentee ballot straight in the ballot box at your local Board of Elections. And if you are scared the post office is somehow going to lose that, I don't blame you. Be safe out there. Wear your protection. I do not like it one bit. And there was also some guy with a Trump shirt on just sitting outside of the polling place. And some of the poll workers were actually talking to him, I think telling him to leave, which he should. I don't know why the cop inside, who was the security guard, didn't come outside and was like, hey, you're kind of just loitering. You can't just sit there. So I voted and ducked. I was like, okay, I'm out. I don't want to stick around for all this. This is madness. But I got it done. I got it out of the way. I'm pretty proud of myself. I'm just hoping everybody out there, you know, go out there and vote. If you can, do. I don't know if voter registration is still going on, but if you haven't registered to vote, get on it. I know it's really hard and it's really scary, especially if you've never been voting before and you've never had someone, like, take you. But I've been taking my daughter voting with me ever since she was an infant. And that's just because I'd like to be as invested in my community as possible. I want people to be safe. I want to be informed. If a murder goes on, I want to be on it. Because Grace is on the case, y'all. Grace is on the case. I love that. That's the only good thing about my name is it rhymes with case. I've done enough blah blah. On to a really important podcast I'd like to introduce to everybody. It's called Down the Hill. It's a deep dive. Deep dive. This week, I'm going to do a deep dive into Down the Hill, the Delphi murders. So this crime, it happened in Delphi, Indiana, and it is the murders of Abigail Williams and her cousin, Liberty German. So this podcast is hosted by Barbara McDonald. She's an Atlanta-based producer for HLN TV. Also is Dan Says Matowitz. He's the podcast producer for Warner Media. And Andrew Iden is the writer and content producer for CNN and HLN. So I believe because this is an ongoing case and it is so shocking that these three reporters are all coming in together and working in Delphi to work this case and spread awareness. So, the first episode is called A Walk on the Bridge. So, to sum up what this episode's about, it's on a warmer than average day in February, 13-year-old Abigail Williams and 14-year-old Liberty German decided to go to the park on their day off from school. It was a free snow day, as schools up north here get an allotted amount of days a year for inclement weather. But due to milder winters in the past few years, there's hardly any snow anymore because of global warming. Snow days are fewer and farther between, so they had the day off, basically. Libby's sister, Kelsey German, dropped the two girls off from her car on her way to work, but they never showed up to be picked up at their usual pickup spot. The next 20 hours has the entire town frantically searching the woods. So this was the park that they were dropped off. They just wanted to spend the day taking pictures and just enjoying the beautiful day, like we did as a family today. Honestly, it was so gorgeous out on a nice, strangely warm day in Ohio. Anyway, moving on. So episode two is The Day Delphi Changed. The girls were found, and it was not to a good end. The murder investigation begins. We do not know any of the gory details of the crime scene, but it is described as horrific. So episode three is called A Picture and a Search Warrant. Libby was taking pictures on the bridge in the park of Abby when someone on the bridge spooked her enough to hit record on her phone. Her recovered phone may have captured her murderer. Police release very small snippets of a man in question in the hopes of getting tips. This is very eerie, and it's very weird to me, for many cases, for someone to have the wherewithal to actually film the person coming at them. Episode four is called Three Words. The vocal recordings of the suspect on Libby's phone is released to the public. Those three words ordering the two girls down the hill. If you can actually look up online right now these audio recordings, if you go to Down the Hill, the podcast, they have all of these snippets. You can listen for yourself, and the reason for them releasing these recordings is so that maybe someone out there will recognize the voice and turn someone in, or sorry, not turn someone in, but throw a tip out there so maybe police can investigate a little further. Episode five is just called Signatures. Robert Ives, the prosecutor of Carroll County in 2017, sheds light on some unusual signatures left by the killer. Again, we don't know what happened to these girls exactly. They won't release that, and for obvious reasons. When they have a suspect, that suspect is going to correlate in their confessions the details of that murder, of that crime scene. So you don't want the media giving all of that information out because it will compromise. Some people will wrongly confess to something for whatever reason. Right now, we're in a really desperate time where there's plenty of people who probably would be desperate just to have a roof over their head and some square meals. So maybe prison isn't a bad option when you have no other options. That's why you need to keep this, you need to keep these cases under wraps. Episode six is called A Walk in the Woods. So the team of journalists, they all go to the scene of the crime and they talk to those affected by the murder. So episode seven is called Madness. A police sketch is released, and speculation runs wild in the town of Delphi. Episode eight is A New Direction. Doug Carter, the lead investigator, holds a press conference after 2 years of information gathering. He reveals the killer is a Delphi native, or at least spent time in Delphi, as his confidence about the area is noted. A new sketch and further vocal audio is released. They add, "Guys, down the hill." But suspicion and paranoia only grows. So if you end up looking up any of these case files, you'll see that the first sketch is a very vague, as like a typical police sketch, whereas the new police sketch it's not exactly new. They had them both, but I, for whatever reason, they needed to add more information before they could release it. But it is a lot more detailed. He has more facial hair. He has more actual 3D features. You can see it's a better sketch. But again, it has suspicion and paranoia in this town just totally exemplifies. Episode 9 is 3 February's. The team revisits Delphi and share their thoughts about what happened that day 3 years ago. So this is an ongoing case. There is not a clean ending. So all I ask is to look at the police sketches, hear the audio, and maybe listen to this podcast for the case details. It is an amazing, award-winning podcast that is down the hill. The Delphi murders. Give it a listen. And this happened right in Indiana. People say that he could be in Ohio. He could be in any of the neighboring states. So, you know, check it out. This segment we like to call the Weeklies. For all those weekly cases, you know. This week on That Spooky, it came out on Wednesday. The name of the episode is Straining to Void. So it's kind of silly. It's the Humperdoo Poltergeist. Now, it sounds like a funny name, but it's actually out of Humperdoo, Australia. So there was a couple of couples who lived in this house to save money. And they started noticing that pebbles were coming from the ceiling, just dropping straight down. Then it would be shards of glass. And then there would be knives would be just falling from the sky. The ceiling. So when the couple, you know, heard noises upstairs in the attic, they go to investigate, and out of the attic comes all these pebbles. And they're like, what the hell? They decide it must be some kind of animal or something and go to sleep. But after weeks and weeks and weeks, they are still experiencing all of these strange phenomenon, and the house is blessed not once but twice by a priest, and both times the priests say that this is some kind of entity that isn't going to leave. So they are just at a loss, but anyway, so That Spooky put out with Straining to Void is really awesome, and if you want to listen to it, you go right ahead, and the name of that podcast is That's Spooky. This week on Crime Junkie, on Wednesday, they came out with the Shaquita Bennett and Tara Costigan case. Both of these are completely different murders that occurred. Now, Shaquita Bennett was from Chicago, and she had been experiencing domestic violence with her boyfriend. She had ended up leaving him, but in the process, he was constantly harassing her, stalking her, showing up at her job, and she had put up court orders and restraining orders to get this man to stop and just leave her alone. Eventually, he ended up just walking right through that and shooting her in the head in her apartment. Tara Costigan is actually from Australia, so from the whole other side of the world. She was also experiencing domestic violence with her husband. What was happening is that he had a drug problem, and she and her family were trying to have an intervention, you know, but she ended up having to leave him and really didn't want to press charges. But because the hospital staff that she ended up going to saw when he walked into the hospital and was storming and raging, and the nurses basically convinced her that they were so frightened of the situation that she had to get a domestic violence order, what's called a DVO. And as soon as, you know, she got that, she was actually nursing their baby when he rocked into their house. She was with her mother and her sister, I believe, and she ran through to the back kitchen, her sister protecting her, baby in her arms, and this man had a hatchet and swung it at Tara. He ended up catching her in the back of the neck, severing her spine, and her sister's little finger. So of course this was terrible. The baby was not hurt at all, but after this she was bleeding and pronounced dead as soon as EMTs arrived. This was just terribly shocking, but these two cases have domestic violence at their core, and it is just, oh, it's a brutal reminder that to look out for the red flags. Avoid people who are trying to isolate you from your friends. Avoid people who try and put control on things about your life, or even when you're in the process of leaving, try and rely on the people who love you and your friends around you, and get as much court help as you can. What showed in Shaquita Bennett's case is that she had tried to rely on the system to save her, but she was failed at every turn. Police just didn't take it as seriously, but we need to take domestic violence seriously. When things start to escalate, people do crazy things. This week on True Crime Garage, they did the Missoula Mauler, Part 1 and Part 2. This is the case of Wayne Nance. He's a suspected serial killer and is a native of Missoula, Montana. He died during a home invasion of his employer, so he has been connected with the death of Donna Pounds in 1974, with the 1980 murder of 15-year-old Devonna Nelson, 16-year-old Marcella Sherry Mercy Bachman. On September 9th of 1985, there was an unknown female skeleton of Japanese or mixed Asian descent who was found in Missoula, Montana, believed to have died between 1983 and 1985. She has not been identified, but is referred to as Christy Crystal Lake because she was found there by Crystal Lake. He is considered the suspect in that murder. He also killed Michael and Teresa Shook. He invaded the home. Raped and killed Teresa and her husband Michael, and then burned the house with their four children inside. Fortunately, all four kids escaped, and it was Doug and Chris Wells who brought him down. So Doug was a gunsmith, and after being tied up and stabbed in the chest, he knew he had very little time. He was able to break free. He grabbed his gun while Nance was assaulting his wife Chris and shot him. Nance died the next day of his injuries, and law enforcement looked further into him and saw that it was very similar to the Shook case and were able to connect him to a ton of these cases. So that was incredibly interesting. That was the Missoula murder on True Crime Garage this week. This week on the Murder Squad, it is called the Keddy Cabin Murders. This came out on Tuesday of this past week. So Billy Jensen and Paul Holes are trying to close a 40-year-old case. Sue Sharp, her son John Sharp, her daughter Tina Sharp, who went missing, and John's friend Dan Wingate are the victims. They were found murdered in a small resort town of Keddy, California. And as time goes on, more evidence just seems to go missing. But the forensic genealogy is starting to catch up with the DNA evidence. So if you want to look into the Keddy Cabin murders, they are trying to solve these crimes. So Sue Sharp was found dead in her living room. She looks to have been assaulted. She was naked from the waist down. Her son John and his friend Dana Winwright were tied up and shot execution style in the head. Tina Sharp was never found, but a skull was found years after by hunters, and they do believe it was Tina Sharp. So there was some confessions, I guess, made, some talk, and there's some suspects listed. It could be two guys. I believe there were two men who actually were crushing on Sue Sharp and weren't able to get her down for a date, and it was one of those situations where perhaps they decided just to take what they wanted instead of getting anything, any kind of real relationship. So listen to that if you want more information on the Keddie Cabin murders. Perhaps we can try and get something solved. This is just a horrible, horrible story. This week on Generation Y, it was the case of Sally Chalin. This was a case out of the UK. It was, the story is Sally, after 31 years in an abusive marriage, took a hammer and bashed her husband's head in with 20 blows. She claimed jealousy over his constant infidelity, but it was through education that she learned of her abusive situation. See, he was physically abusive to her. Whenever she questioned his, you know, infidelity all throughout their marriage, he pretty much set a precedent to beating her up. Eventually, you know, she got a job and they had a joint account, and she was not allowed to spend any of her money while he ended up spending all of their money on extravagant things, anything he wanted. And I believe there was a Ferrari. He ended up buying a Ferrari. Like, just the nerve of having someone who works their job and isn't allowed to spend any of their own money. He also constantly used the children as a means to keep her in check and to keep her in the relationship. You know, he really had her in this coercive situation that she didn't feel she could get out of. Some backstory is that Sally ended up marrying her husband when she was 15 years old, and he was 27. So she didn't have any other boyfriend. She didn't have any other idea of how she was supposed to be treated in a relationship. So it was actually, she had, what happened is that her family all knew that she was an abused wife. And she said she was guilty, and was convicted of first degree murder and was to spend like life in prison. But it was her children and her friends who pushed to get a manslaughter charge instead because of her coercive situation. She just didn't feel she had any way out. And it was through these other external circumstances that judges were able to give her a retrial, and she was not acquitted, but was got time served as a manslaughter charge. She had already spent 13 years in prison, and I believe her manslaughter charge would have been for about like 8 to 10. So she was released, and her record was wiped off, and she did end up spending a few of her years trying to raise education about abusive situations. Right now, I think she's really stepped away and just wants to live her life. And how can you blame her? She just, after 31 years and in a prison-like marriage and then spending a number of those years also in prison, I just want to, like, just take things easy. Just do things the way I'd like to for a little bit. So a couple of my other favorites that happened this week was True Crime Obsessed. They did Athlete A. This is the documentary about the USA women's gymnastics scandal and the taking down of Larry Nassar. If you don't know who Larry Nassar is, get out of your hole. Dig something out. Give it a goog. No, I'm just kidding. I'll go ahead and tell you. Larry Nassar was a doctor who is like the team doctor for the USA women's gymnastics team. And he would molest these young girls. We're talking about like 9 to 12 year old, 13, 14 year old girls. And they all were like, ew, I was experiencing this too. Ooh, me too. And it became an issue. It all started with the coaches. So the hosts, Patrick and Jillian, burn Olympic size holes into the abusive coaches and doctors' buttholes. They end up just killing it. I absolutely love Patrick and Jillian and their take on these documentaries. But moving on to another Obsessed Network podcast is Obsessed with Disappeared. Now, this is host Patrick, same host for True Crime Obsessed, Patrick Hines, and his friend Ellen Marsh, who was on Broadway. They covered the disappearance of April Pitzer. So this is IDs Disappeared. It's the show that they're reacting to. And April Pitzer was arrested for a DUI, but instead became a drug informant to avoid any time in jail. She helped put away 33 meth dealers, but this also made her incredibly paranoid. She was bouncing around in the desert and ended up couch surfing and was homeless. Her mom begged her to come home when she found out that she was feeling a little bit threatened, and her mom lived in another state, but she ended up saying, yes, I will, but she procrastinated and was never found. The police questioned a friend of hers who was making like a deathbed confession about April being in the mine that the officers already searched, but she was just deeper. Unfortunately, they never found her. She is still considered missing. But this was it's weird for me to say that it's hilarious, because this is not a hilarious, obviously a hilarious topic, but, you know, to discuss it, and of course, Ellen and Patrick have been lifelong friends and make fun of each other royally, that part is hilarious. But anyway, so those are a couple of my favorites right there. Moving on. Another one of my absolute favorites is Crime Countdown. This is Unforgettable Crimes of 1995. Take me back to 1995, when all of my Beanie Babies played together and we all thought that they were going to be... Oh, you had to keep the tags on. Oh, you had to keep the tags on, or they were not going to have their resale value. But anyway, Crime Countdown had some amazingly just crazy 1995 cases. So those were really fun. But this week on my absolute favorite, Wine and Crime, is a bonus! Air horn sounds. On Monday, they released Unsuspecting Suspects, which threw me through a loop because, well, it didn't throw me through a loop. Nanny Doss, if you've never heard of her, she is just the most grandmotherly serial killer ever that you will ever have known. So she was definitely an unsuspecting suspect in that case. They also did Australian serial killers. So, of course, what's his dumb face? Ivan Milat, and his crazy ass was featured on there. And military murderers. So that particular episode was Dark, with a capital D-A-R-K, Dark. But of course the gals always deliver these cases with all the love and humor that just warms me up all summer, all winter, every day that I see them. I absolutely love it. I think that's going to wrap up for my absolute favorites. Also wanted to mention the Fall line, which isn't exactly my favorite, but I'll say it's a weekly. It did come out with their final part 4 of the Samuel Little case. Guys, Samuel Little preyed on black women who he deemed to be on the fringes of society. So oftentimes, we're not fully aware of how much of a monster this man is, because he was able to fly under the radar for so long. But anyway, look into the Fall line if you want a detailed, if you want like detailed information on the Samuel Little case. But as I'm going to wrap it up, I just want to say thank you so much for listening. If you want to follow me on Instagram, I am Grace's World of True Crime Podcasts. On Facebook, Grace's World of True Crime Podcasts. And my Twitter account is also Grace's World of True Crime Podcasts. You can find me on Spotify, Google Podcasts, and Anchor. So, oh, goodbye for now, guys. I look forward to next week where I don't even know what I'm going to cover for episode 8. Maybe if you guys look into my Instagram or my Facebooks, give me some suggestions. You know, I listen to so many. I have To Live and Die in LA in my head. I've got Teacher's Pet in my head. I've got This Sounds Serious. I've got... there's so many, and there's so many new discoveries too. So I'm thinking about expanding my list to be like more discoveries, more like help me solve a murder, whereas like solved cases. There's just so many. Anyway, I'm done bantering. You can also support me on Anchor if you want. Just go to my Anchor app, or go to my Anchor link, and you'll see a little button there that says support if you so wish. If you think I'm doing a pretty good job and you want me to keep going, you know, I could use a little boost of something just to keep me interested in wanting to do this and deliver all of the super spooky true crime podcast to you. Anyway, I'm done. Talk to you later, guys. See you next week. Bye. I just felt like playing you guys out with a little something nice, you know? Good luck, everybody. Don't be an irony. We love you.